And we're now very excited to be joined by Tobias Carlisle, founder and managing director of Acquirers Funds, who recently launched their first ETF. It's appropriately called the Acquirers Fund. The ticker symbol is ZIG, Z-I-G. And underlying this ETF is something called the Acquirers Multiple, which Tobias actually created and wrote a book on. And by the way, he's also written three other books, Concentrated Investing, Deep Value, and Quantitative Value. And to top it all off, he has a legal background as well. He was a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. Tobias is on the line with us from Los Angeles. Tobias, great to finally have you on ETF Prime. Thanks for joining us.
What a great introduction. Thanks for having me, gents.
All right, so we have to start with your background here. How in the world did you go from practicing law to launching an ETF?
Well, I had always enjoyed value investing. I'd read security analysis when I was studying at law school, and I worked in an area of law that's pretty close to, so I worked in mergers and acquisitions, and the time when I started working was the early 2000s, so there was a lot of activism, and there was a lot of private equity, and so those two informed the way that I invested, because I could see these guys doing a lot of work to take a company private, paying a premium to do that, and then at the same time, I could see a comparable company listed on the stock exchange. It's so much easier to buy it when it's publicly listed, and I could see that you could buy it for a cheaper price. And I thought, if these guys think that this thing is going to work privately, paying a higher premium, then I'm sure it's going to work publicly, paying less for it.
Okay, so on that note, before we get to the ETF itself, you wrote a book called The Acquirers Multiple. Explain for us what The Acquirers Multiple is.
So The Acquirers Multiple is a ratio that looks at companies, businesses, and values them in the same way that activists and private equity firms do. So you might be familiar with the price-to-earnings ratio, which looks at literally the bottom-line profitability of a company and then compares that to the market capitalization. But what it misses is how much debt the company's carrying, whether it's got some cash on its balance sheet, whether it's got preferred stock, and a variety of other things that are real cost to an acquirer of the company. So we include those into our analysis, and then we look at a metric that's operating income that's a little bit different from bottom line profitability. And the idea is that it adjusts for interest payments and tax, and it looks at the accounting measure of cash flow that goes into the company.
Okay, so that brings us to the Acquirers Fund. Again, ticker symbol ZIG, ZIG. This is a long-short strategy, and the ETF uses this Acquirers Multiple to identify deeply undervalued companies who are potentially strong targets for activist and buyout firms. Then it shorts what are believed to be overvalued companies. Take us from there. Explain the details. Explain the investment process.
So shorting is not just the opposite of going long, because a lot of these companies, I can't even come up with a valuation for them. So it's not to say that they're overvalued. It's just to say that it's impossible to value them, because typically they're losing money. They're burning cash. They have a lot of debt. They have an interesting story, which is what everybody has latched onto. So Tesla was one for a long time that was in the screen, but it's no longer in there. And we've looked at other things that are software, internet type businesses where really the way that they're surviving is they're issuing stock and they're using that to keep themselves afloat in the hope that at some stage the business will start making money. And we're looking at them at the time that they seem to be running out of money. They've got a lot of debt. Something special needs to happen. And the market has also woken up to it because the stock has no momentum. So what I mean by that is the stock is basically not up over the last 12 months, which I think indicates that the market's getting a little bit tired of the story and something is about to happen to the stock. So we buy it short at that stage, looking forward to the next quarter and hoping that something happens in that quarter.
What is the universe of stocks that you pull from, and then how many holdings are in this ETF?
It's the top 1,500, so it's comparable to, say, the S&P 1,500, which is a composite index, but that's about it targets this mid to small part of the market where there's still active professional private equity and active activists, and we also think that the companies have enough heft to survive, so if anything happens on the long side, they've got professional management, and they've got reasonably strong, robust, national-sized businesses. And in the portfolio, we have 30 stocks long, and we weight them a little bit. We weight them 4.33%. We're aiming for that at inception, so that's 130% long. And then we short them all to 1% short. So there's 30 shorts to 1% short.
So as you alluded to, this is a 130-30 long short strategy. For investors not familiar with this, can you explain the benefits of this approach and perhaps what the risk return profile looks like compared to just going 100% long?
Sure. So the net long is 100% long. So you can think of it as two portfolios. One is just a net long value investing deep value portfolio, and then there's another market neutral 30-30 portfolio attached to it. What we're trying to capture with the 30-30 long short part of the portfolio is there's a spread between the most overvalued and the most undervalued stocks, and that tends to close over time. So each time we rebalance, we're trying to capture that spread closing as the undervalued stocks get a little bit more pricey and the expensive stocks come back down to earth. And then on the long side, that 100% long, all we're trying to do is capture the long-term outperformance of value stocks. Although it's been a rough sort of 5 years for value, everybody may be aware that value stocks have tended to underperform because it's been a very frothy market, but that's unusual. If we look at the data going back, we can go back to the 1920s, we can go back to the 1950s, and we can see that historically value has tended to do a little bit better. You get a value premium that outperforms the market.
Is there anything done to ensure diversification across sectors, or do you simply go with the companies you believe to be most undervalued or I guess pricey if you're shorting, wherever those may be?
So I have a view that stocks tend to get cheap in an industry at the same time. And if you limit your exposure to any given industry, then you're limiting your potential upside performance. So we don't do that. And what that means is that we tend to be concentrated in whatever is the most undervalued sector at the time. So, for example, right now it's financials. Financials are historically cheap, and they're cheap relative to every other sector in the on the market. So we have a concentration. We're about 50% financials right now.
Tobias, this is an index-based ETF, and as I understand it, you're looking at financial statements for statistical measures of fraud, earnings manipulation, financial distress. How do you go from sort of that forensic evaluation of company financial statements in considering valuations to the actual index itself?
Well, we construct the index in-house. That's sort of where the brains, the know-how, and the IP is. And so we have models that pull out the stock names that we'd like to be invested in, and then we have a final step where we run this forensic accounting analysis just to make sure that there's nothing in the financial statements that fools the model. So sometimes you might have an unusual financial statement. Insurers typically have unusual financial statements because often their liabilities are carried off balance sheet. They're not easy to be included, and that might suggest to the model that they look cheaper than they actually are. So we run this analysis just to make sure that the economic reality is reflected in the financial statements. And if it is, then we buy them. The reason we do it as an index product is that has some very substantial tax benefits over running it as an active fund. From our perspective, there's not much difference between running it actively or running it passively. But if we run it passively, then we get these capital gains tax advantages.
Our guest is Tobias Carlisle, founder and managing director of Acquirers Funds. They recently launched a new ETF, the Acquirers Fund, ticker symbol ZIG. Tobias, as I know you're well aware, the value ETF space is extremely crowded. And of course, look, the ETFs run a spectrum here, right? There's everything from really watered down value ETFs based on price to book to highly concentrated value ETFs using other value metrics. Can you talk about where ZIG fits and how you're attempting to differentiate here?
Right. So we say that there's a big difference between value as a factor and value as a philosophy. So value as a factor is the academic quantitative approach to value, and they might use price to book, say, for example, as one of the main metrics. And that's what some of the bigger indexes do, where they might hold 1,000 stocks or several thousand stocks. And what's going to happen with those indexes is that they're going to be tied to the performance of that factor, and they tend to give, as you say, fairly watered down performance, but they do tend to track the main index, the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 or whatever the case may be, pretty closely. And so they don't underperform much, but they don't outperform much either. What we try to do is we try to find companies that are genuinely undervalued, deeply undervalued. And the result of that will be that they'll give this wide tracking error. So what that means is that the path that they're going to take is going to be wildly divergent from the path of the broader indexes. That means sometimes it's going to underperform, and that's certainly what's happened over the last 5 years. But we think that we've reached this point in the market where the spread between the most overvalued and the most undervalued is so wide. If you start betting now on value, there's a good chance that that tracking error outperforms to the upside.
Given that wide tracking error, do you view ZIG as a core position in a portfolio? And it's really then just making sure an investor is educated on what type of ride to expect?
Right. Well, so what we say is that that's certainly a possibility for people to take, but we say that the fund gives you this very concentrated exposure to the value factor. So you don't need to put a big part of your portfolio in. We say it's capital efficient. You can put a small portion of your portfolio into it, and you get all of that outsized exposure to value. And then you can put in whatever else you like for the vast majority of your exposure. So you might like VT, which is the Vanguard Total Market, or something else like that that'll give you the low-cost market kind of performance, and then we'll give you the very specialized, concentrated exposure to value.
You mentioned it's been a rough 5 years for a value. I think just about everyone is pretty well aware that growth has crushed value in terms of performance. Two questions here. Why do you think that is? And then you began to touch on this a bit earlier, but what, if anything, does that mean moving forward?
You know, these things, these cycles happen on a regular basis in the market. Everybody remembers the dot-com boom. Value underperformed pretty substantially then. Same thing happened at the very tail end of the 2007 boom. When the markets get speculative, and you can see Beyond Meat, BYND, which folks might know about, it's not meat. But the stock has a roughly $10 or $11 billion valuation. It loses about $60 million a year. There's some fierce competition in that area, and yet the stock is up 10 or 12%. Most days, and that is going to go on until it stops and it turns around. Why it stops, I don't know. I think folks just get tired of the speculative nature of the stock. When that happens, they're probably going to go looking for solid balance sheets, free cash flow, stock being bought back, and that's what we provide.
But what do you think is driving that growth outperformance over the past 5 years?
I think it could be, you know, interest rates set at a too low level, very accommodative Fed policy. It's a combination of just animal spirits on the one hand, and that often seems to coincide with interest rates being set too low.
Yeah, and by the way, I have to mention, so on Twitter last week, Jake, so Econompic, he ran two great polls. One asked, what is the most likely reason growth stocks have outperformed value stocks over the last 1, 3, 5, 10, and 15 years? And then the other asked, what is the least likely reason? And the answer to both of those polls was the Fed. I just thought that was classic. Tobias, I guess playing devil's advocate, if the last time value spreads were this wide, you know, you go back to the dot-com crash and perhaps the financial crisis, shouldn't investors be reducing risk overall? I mean, even if value outperforms growth, isn't there a chance investors get bludgeoned anyway?
Well, you may recall in the early 2000s, it was an unusual period in the market where the market was falling, but value stocks were going up and outperforming, and a lot of value investors made their names through that period. But that's because it followed a period in the late 1990s where value underperformed horribly while the market was very strong. And even as vaunted a value name as Warren Buffett, there were magazine covers saying, has Warren lost his touch? And you can certainly see comparable newspaper magazine covers right now talking about the death of value investing. And so I love seeing those because I'm a contrarian, mean reverting guy, and I think that means that something good's about to happen.
Well, how much of that do you think is really based on this whole discussion around what value really is, right? What's the right metric to use here? And obviously, you probably think your metric is the best, but what are your thoughts on measures like price to book? Is that, do you think the wrong metrics are contributing to this discussion around value being dead?
Yeah, price to book certainly has, there are two issues with price to book, and one is cyclical and one is secular. The cyclical one is just the underperformance of value. Folks don't want stuff that is boring and old economy. The secular one, there are some problems with the accounting treatment. It's a technical discussion, but there are some problems with the accounting treatment. Some of these companies have bought back so much stock, they have negative equity, and they're still very good companies throwing off an enormous amount of cash, but price to book just can't classify them properly as being value stocks. So there are problems with price to book. I prefer flow measures. So what I mean by that is I prefer cash flow, to enterprise value or earnings to enterprise value or the acquirer's multiple, which is an earnings cash flow type metric, because it doesn't really matter what the nature of the economy is, whether it's a heavy asset intensive business or it's a sort of more dot-com-y type business. Ultimately, the success or failure of that business is demonstrated in how much money it makes. And as a value investor, I want to pay as little as I possibly can for that. And the questions about value investing often come at the end of the bull market when value investing has been underperforming. And those questions are always, they look at it and they say, well, if you had a little bit more growth in your portfolio, you'd have done a little bit better. And so the more growth you have in your portfolio, the better you've done. But as a mean reverting guy, I've seen that argument a few times before, and I think that what happens is that's an argument that only happens at the end of the bull market, and we have a crash, value have a very good run, and then we'll go back to being old school value investors again.
Tobias, this is Connor Kelly. Going back to the short side of the portfolio here for a minute, that's not something that gets discussed too often on our show. You mentioned, you know, Beyond Meat, right? And a couple other recent IPOs, right, with Uber and Lyft, these companies that are losing money, yet their stock prices continue to climb. And obviously, you're not going to short a company, like you said, without some breakdown in the momentum of that stock. But just for our listeners and our own interest, could you maybe list one or two of the perhaps more interesting shorts you guys have right now in the fund?
Sure. So the one that I've discussed publicly on a number of occasions is Grubhub. Now, Grubhub is a company that has a price earnings ratio above 100. I think it's in the 130. So you're paying an enormous amount of money for the underlying business. It doesn't really matter how good that business is. That's probably too much money to pay. But you can walk into any restaurant now, and you can see that they have half a dozen iPads that all connect them to different services. And I know in my family, when we order food, we go and we find the cheapest way to buy whatever food we want delivered. So Grubhub is a company that it's not making much money at the moment. It's way too expensive, and there's fierce competition. I think when you get those things together, particularly when the stock price has languished for 12 months, that's often an indication that that the stock is overpriced and there's going to be a little bit of downside momentum there, and we're going to try to capture that. But we're always rebalancing that short portfolio on a regular basis. And the reason that we do that is that shorting is a sort of dark art more than it's a science. And we're looking for stocks that are typically losing money, burning cash, heavily indebted, issuing stock to stay alive, raising debt to stay alive, and no momentum, but still the stock price is wildly divergent from the underlying reality of the company. So another one that we had in our models was Tesla. Well, that's now out of our portfolio, but it was one that was in there for a long time. And the reason that that's out, even though a lot of the other criteria are still met, it's out because it's become too heavily shorted. And we tend to exit at that stage because the fortunes of the performance of that stock are now tied to what the shorts do. So the shorts can get spooked like anybody else, and that can create short squeezes and funny things happen in the stock. So one of our own risk metrics is just to exit when they become too heavily shorted. So it was still down roughly 50% over our holding period. But when it came time to form the portfolio for the ETF about a month ago, we took it out because it was too heavily shorted.
Tobias, we have just a couple of minutes left. Going back to the launch of your ETF, I know you and I visited about this down at the Inside ETFs conference earlier this year, but I was hoping you might be willing to share with our listeners. Look, you're an entrepreneur. You came up with this idea. You know how brutal the ETF business is, right? There's pressure on fees. Good ideas can be ripped off by larger issuers. You have to get distribution, right? You have to get past the gatekeepers at wirehouses and in larger firms. What made you look at all that and still decide you want to be in the ETF business?
Well, I think that there's nothing out there like ZIG. That long, short, deep value is unusual to unique. I don't want to say it's unique because there are comparable funds out there. But I think that the performance of value has been so bad for so long. And being a mean reverting guy, I think that what happens is that value tends to outperform over periods of bad performance. And I think that I've got I'm reasonably well known on Twitter at least, and I've written a number of books that explain the philosophy about what I'm trying to do pretty clearly. So I think that I'm a sort of known quantity, that the investment strategy is a known strategy. We're going to implement it the way that I think that it should be done, and I think we're going to get some good performance. And I think when all of those things come together, that tends to be something that folks can get behind with some comfort, and they'll know what we're going to do. They'll know how we're going to perform, and they're going to know the reasons why we do it. And I think that that's a pretty compelling pitch.
Well, Tobias, really glad we could finally connect. Congratulations on the ETF. We'll certainly be cheering for your success. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Connor. It was a real pleasure.
That was Tobias Carlyle, founder and managing director of Acquirers Funds. And you can learn more about Zig by visiting acquirersfund.com.